All right, how are we doing this morning?
Good, okay.
All right, well, hey, as we begin this morning, I want to take you here to the Roman Colosseum. Has anyone been here before? Anyone been here? Brian has, and Thomas, and yes. Yes, okay. So some of you maybe have visited this site. It's in Rome, Italy. So this was built in 72 AD. It took about 10 years to build, about a decade. And some of you may not be aware that this is actually still the largest standing outdoor amphitheater in the world. It's still the largest. Like I said, it took 10 years to build. And through history, this site right here was home to some of the most violent and brutal spectator events to have ever occurred. So when this first opened in 80 AD, Roman Emperor Titus was his name. When it first opened, he called for 100 straight days of some sort of entertainment, some sort of violent entertainment here in the Colosseum. So every day for 100 days, there would be some sort of spectator event that would be put on for the hundreds of thousands of people who came out and watched. We have an old painting up here, two paintings. What would happen here in the Colosseum? Obviously, you know that gladiator games were fought here. Gladiators would fight against each other. Gladiators would fight against prisoners. Gladiators would fight against wild animals. Wild animals would fight against each other. They would import wild animals from all over the world to fight here in the Roman Colosseum. Sometimes wild animals would fight against prisoners. Oftentimes there were executions that would happen here in the Roman Colosseum. Sometimes they would have these full-on navy mock battles or army battles that would happen here. Now, it wasn't just violent events, mostly violent events, but they'd also hold sporting contests, athletic events, theater shows. They'd celebrate holidays, festivals, contest parades. So in the first through the fifth century of the Roman Empire, this is quite the place to be, quite the place for Roman, the hub of Roman social life, Roman entertainment. And we know about 50 to 80,000 spectators would show up every time a show would be put on. Now, something that's very difficult to talk about is the amount of Christians who were brutally killed here in this Colosseum. It's hard to know the number, but probably in the thousands, Christians were brutally killed here for entertainment purposes. So after Jesus died, lots of persecution broke out in the Roman Empire. So it was illegal to be a Christian in the Roman Empire for the first few centuries. And so thousands of Christians during this time would be chased down, arrested, and then brutally executed, like I said, all for amusement purposes here in the Roman Colosseum. Now, we have another painting up here. This is an old piece of art that depicts one of these early moments. As you can see, there's a group of Christians there in the middle of the floor of the Colosseum, and you see two, three beasts that are about to be released on them. Now, if you notice closely, there's torches on fire on the outer rim of the floor of this Colosseum. And if you look closely, there's actually people on those torches. And that is a big thank you to the Roman Emperor Nero, who would set Christians on fire in the Roman Colosseum. He'd burn them at the stake. Now, Roman Emperor Nero, he wouldn't just burn Christians on fire in the Roman Colosseum. He would set Christians on fire and use them as torches to light up his weekly dinner parties. So that's the kind of emperor that he was. Why am I talking about this? It's depressing. It's sad. Well, November 1st of every year, that would have been last Friday, there is a holiday in the church calendar, and it's called All Saints Day, or some call it All Saints and Martyrs Day. And this is pretty much a day when we celebrate and honor and commemorate the lives of saints and martyrs through history. What's a martyr? A martyr is someone who has died for their faith in Jesus. But a saint is someone who has lived well for Jesus in their faith. And whenever this holiday comes around every year, November 1st, it is a time when we get to honor, like I said, observe, commemorate, and celebrate the lives of people who gave their lives for Jesus, who lived well for Jesus. And it can be sad for sure, but their stories can also be deeply inspiring to us, people who chose to not just live well for Jesus, but even at times die for their allegiance to Jesus. So this morning, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to take a few minutes and just give space for their legacies, give space for a few of their stories, because I think it's really important this morning just for us to honor some of these individuals who did this. So first, I want to talk about these two women up here. Their names are Perpetua and Felicity. This is a painting of both of them. Now, Perpetua and Felicity were two women, and this is actually one of the oldest accounts we have of two Christians who died in a Roman Colosseum. Let me tell you their story. So here's what happened. In 200 AD, the Roman emperor in that time, his name was Emperor Severus. He decided he wanted some primetime entertainment to celebrate his birthday. So what's he going to do? What kind of party did he want to throw? Well, he decided he wanted to see some executions in a Roman Colosseum. Naturally, that's the kind of party he wanted to throw. So he sent some of his soldiers to North Africa. They found a group of Christian friends. They arrested them and began making preparations for these friends to be executed in a Roman Colosseum. Now, those arrested were these two friends, Perpetua and Felicity, but also three other friends of theirs. And they were all young adults, most likely in their 20s, and they were all thrown into jail. Now, Perpetua, she was 22 years old. She was newly married, and she just had a newborn baby. Now, her friend Felicity, she also was in her young early 20s, and she was 8 months pregnant when she was arrested, and she ended up having her baby there in jail. She went through a painful labor, a painful delivery. So the guards actually separated Perpetua and Felicity from their newborn infants, okay? Now, it's worth mentioning that if any point in time Perpetua, Felicity, or their three other friends wanted to be released, all they would have to do was deny Jesus, just recant their faith, and they would have easily released them. And especially for these two ladies, if they wanted to be reunited with their babies, they could have just denied Jesus and been reunited. They couldn't do that, though. They had to be loyal to their allegiance to Jesus. So on March 7th, 203 AD, all five of these friends were thrown into the Roman Colosseum. Now, what would be the form of entertainment? They would fight against wild beasts, four times their size. So that morning, the guards ordered them to walk out to the middle of the Colosseum together. And I want you just to imagine this for a second, all five of these friends walking out hand in hand next to each other. Now, witnesses said that there was this confidence to them as they walked out to the middle of the arena before their deaths. It was almost like they weren't scared to die. So there was a loud trumpet sound, and now it was time for these wild animals to be released. Now, first, a wild leopard was released on two of the men, and the leopard mangled both of them, but they didn't die. On the third man, a wild boar, a violent pig, was released on him. It also attacked him, but he didn't die either. Now, for the two ladies, Perpetua and Felicity, apparently a wild, violent heifer, a female cow, was released on them. This is what one account said. It said, first the heifer tossed Perpetua and she fell on her back. Then she got up and seeing that Felicity, her friend, had been crushed to the ground by the heifer, Perpetua went over to her, gave her her hand and lifted her up. Then the two stood side by side fighting against the heifer. Now the heifer ended up attacking and gravely wounding both of these women, but they also didn't die. So all five of these friends actually stayed alive after these initial animal attacks. Although, like I said, they were severely injured. Now, apparently, the Roman guards tried to release a bear next on these five friends, but witnesses said the bear wouldn't come out of its cage. It just stood in there. It was almost like it was too scared to fight against these five brave friends. Now, the crowd was enraged that these animals hadn't torn these people to pieces, and the emperor was embarrassed. He didn't want these people to leave without seeing a good show. So what would he do next? He decided to send gladiators in. So what the gladiators did was they lined all five of the friends up and made them get down on their knees side by side. And this is what one historian said. He said they took They took the sword in silence without moving. And they rejoiced that they had obtained a share in the Lord's sufferings. So they counted themselves blessed that they got to suffer for Jesus. So one by one, they were killed by the sword until we get to number five, Perpetua, the young 22-year-old woman. So she had to watch all four of her friends get killed, including her dear friend Felicity, who she had just fought side by side against a wild animal with. Now, here's the thing. Apparently, an inexperienced gladiator was given the task of killing Perpetua, but because he was so inexperienced and because he was shaking so badly, he was so intimidated by Perpetua and her courage, he actually didn't strike her in the right place. He struck her in the torso instead of her neck. And he was embarrassed. He was so nervous. He was so intimidated by her. So he panicked after he did that. He didn't quite know what to do. So what happened next was shocking. Apparently, Perpetua ended up helping this gladiator out. She knew she was going to die. She helped this gladiator out. She steadied him. She steadied his sword, and she slowly guided his sword to her neck where it would kill her. And we actually have a picture of this. This is a famous painting. This is what one historical account said. She screamed as she was struck to the bone. Then she took the trembling hand of the young gladiator and guided it to her throat. It was as though so great a woman, feared as she was, could not be slain unless she herself were willing. Like I said, this is one of the oldest accounts we have of Christians being killed in the Roman Colosseum. So every year on November 1st, these five young adults are celebrated for their courage and their devotion to Jesus, and their stories and their legacy lives on. There's another martyr. His name was Polycarp, and we have a picture, a painting up here of this old man. So he was arrested in 155 AD. He was arrested under Roman Emperor Marcus Aurelius. Like I said, he was in his 80s, so he was really old. When they brought him out to the middle of the Colosseum to be burned at the stake, they also gave him an opportunity to deny his faith, to recant his faith, and they told him, just deny Jesus and we will untie these ropes and we will let you free. Just deny Jesus. That's all you have to do. And this is what Polycarp said. It'll be up on the screen. He tells them this: "For 86 years I have served Jesus, and he has done me no wrong. How can I then blaspheme my king who saved me?" What a response. What a response. Now, here's what angered the Roman government. They kept trying to stop Christianity and kill Christians in the first to the fifth century. Now, what's super crazy is their way that they tried to persecute Christians, it had the opposite effect. So the more Christians they killed, the more Christianity would grow. The more people would show up to the Colosseum. They wanted to see a bloodbath, but then they would witness the bravery and the courage of the Christians being killed for their faith in Jesus, and they themselves would want to follow Jesus. So there's an early church father. His name was Tertullian. He had this famous quote. It'll be up on the screen. He would say this. He said, "The blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church." And what he meant by this was that the more Christians died, the more Christianity would spread. And it really did spread like crazy in the Roman Empire in the first through the fifth century. Now, let me tell you of another story that happened a few centuries later. This story is called the 40 Martyrs of Sebaste. The 40 Martyrs of Sebaste. So in 320 AD, a few hundred years later, there was a Roman emperor and his name was Licinius. And Licinius ordered that all of his Roman soldiers worship pagan gods. He asked them, please worship these pagan gods. Now, there were 40 soldiers in his Roman army who were Christians, and they told him, we can't worship pagan gods. We only have allegiance to Jesus. That's what they said. And Licinius was quite angry about this. This angered him tremendously. So this is what he did with the 40 soldiers. The emperor took all 40 of these soldiers. He had them go up to a frozen lake in the mountain ranges of modern day Turkey. He had these men strip completely naked out of their clothes. And they were forced to, in sub-zero degree temperatures, freezing, stand out on top of this frozen lake all night long, endure the bitter, frigid cold. And the idea was that they would stay out there until they would freeze to death. And one of the soldiers was 12 years old. Now, the guards put these hot, steaming bathtubs around the perimeter of the lake. So if any of these men at any point in time wanted to deny Jesus and recant their faith, they could leave the middle of the frozen lake and hop inside one of those bathtubs. And one of them did. There was one man out there, one of the soldiers, that's like, I didn't sign up for this. So he left the frozen lake and hopped inside the bathtub on the outside of the lake, making it 39 soldiers out there. But then one of the Roman guards who was on the outside of the lake watching these 39 men out on the lake was so moved by the bravery of these 39 men that were out there that he himself put his faith in Jesus, stripped out of his clothes, and joins the men on the frozen lake. And all 40 of these men died out there for Jesus together, known as the 40 martyrs of Sebaste. Okay. Now you might ask, did this kind of thing just happen in the early centuries in the Roman Empire? No, I want to tell you a story of something that happened 1900 years later during World War II. There's a man, some of you maybe have heard this story. His name was Maximilian Kolbe. Maximilian Kolbe. He was martyred in 1941. He was a Polish Catholic priest during World War II. And when Germany invaded Poland, Maximilian, it's a great name, Maximilian. Maximilian housed many Jews in Poland, okay? And he was eventually caught doing this. And Maximilian was sent to Auschwitz, the grueling and famous concentration camp there in 1941. Now, when Maximilian was at this concentration camp, one of the fellow prisoners who he was with actually escaped and ran away. And this infuriated the German guards and the Gestapo. And so they decided to take it out on the other prisoners, pretty much. So what happened was they took 10 fellow prisoners there in Auschwitz, and they decided they would have these 10 men starve to death. Okay. Now, Maximilian was not one of the men who was chosen, but he knew that one of the men who was picked to starve to death had a wife and child back home, had a family back home. And Maximilian felt so sad for this man that his family would never get to see him again, that Maximilian chose to volunteer to take this man's place. And sure enough, the German guards and the Gestapo allowed him to swap with this man. And so Maximilian was thrown into starvation with 9 other men after weeks of no food. And after weeks, these 10 men actually still hadn't died yet. And so they were all executed. Now, the man who he swapped with, he ended up living until age 94. Okay, he died in 1995, but he spent the rest of his life telling this story of this random Catholic priest in Auschwitz that swapped with him and took his place, this man that he didn't even know. And so Maximilian, through history, was known as a martyr of charity, and he was a saint giving his life for someone, yeah, that he barely knew. I'm going to tell one more story. You might ask, does anyone now in this day and age die for their faith? Well, I think it was last week, Brandon led a prayer for the persecuted church, which is also a holiday on the calendar, where we pray for people to this day who are still being persecuted for their faith in Jesus. And we might be shocked to know that there was actually someone here from Reading who actually was martyred in 2018. Some of you maybe knew this story. His name was John Chow. I don't know if any of you caught this, but this was actually worldwide news about 7 years ago. But here's what happened. There's this island in the world. We have a picture of this island on the screen. This island, the North Centennial Island, it's south of India, and it's in the northeastern part of the Indian Ocean, okay? So this island is home to the Sentinelese people, which is the most isolated tribe on Earth. This is the most remote tribe on the planet. They have absolutely no contact with the outside world, okay? So anyone or anything that approaches this island gets hunted down, doesn't survive, okay? But John Chow desperately believed that he needed to share Jesus with these people. He famously would say, "Who will share Christ with these people if I don't? Who will share Jesus with these people if I don't?" So John, he went to college in Oklahoma. He went to Oral Roberts University, and then he moved here to Reading and worked. He was an EMT. He actually was friends with my sister when she was living here in Reading, going to grad school. He was an EMT. He also worked out at Whiskey Town for a few years. He saved up money. He got connected with a missionary agency, and then he flew out to Southeast Asia, a little bit north of this island. So after training and equipping himself, in November of 2018, John Chow hitched a ride with some fishermen on a fishing boat who took him near this island to where they dropped him off a little beyond the island, and he kayaked into the island. And we actually have a picture of him, yeah, on this fishing boat. So he kayaked in, and we aren't quite sure exactly what happened, but the next thing we know, a few days later, that same fishing boat sailed past the island in the distance, just kind of to look for John Chow. And they looked in the distance only to see this tribe, the people, dragging John Chow's lifeless body around on the beach. And then the next day, the fishermen, their boat went by again, and they saw his body being buried by the islanders. It's worth mentioning there was a lot of controversy around this story because for a few reasons, many people believe John Chow shouldn't have gone to this island because, for one, it's illegal. But secondly, if anyone from the outside world makes contact with this tribe because they've been isolated and remote for so long, it could make the tribe really sick, and they could all die. And so many people believe that John Chow was being inconsiderate and naive, which I don't know. Maybe we should always be wise with how we do missions. My hat is still off to John Chow, though, because he had a passion to share Jesus with people that didn't know who Jesus was. And he was inducted into the Voice of the Martyrs. It's a nonprofit organization. He was named the Christian Martyr of 2022. All right, I'm going to wrap this up. I want you to take a look at all these people I've referenced this morning. We have Maximilian. We have the 40 Martyrs of Sebaste, Perpetua, John Chow, Felicity, Polycarp. I'm going to have our worship team come on up. I'm going to read this verse again that Quinn read earlier. This is what the book of Hebrews says. It says this. It'll be up here on the screen. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a huge crowd of witnesses to the life of faith, so since we are surrounded by saints and martyrs through history, since we are surrounded, let us strip off every weight that slows us down, especially the sin that so easily trips us up, and let us run with endurance the race that God has set before us. We do this by keeping our eyes on Jesus, the champion who initiates and perfects our faith. So why am I telling you these stories this morning? Two reasons. First off, this verse right here is telling us that hundreds of saints, thousands of saints and martyrs, including these ones, are actually in heaven right now, looking down on us and cheering us on as we do life down here, as we journey with Jesus. What are they cheering for? They are cheering for us to persevere in our faith, to keep going, even when things are hard, to stay faithful to the journey of walking with Jesus, just like they had to be faithful. So they have passed the baton to us, and we get to pick up where they have left off. And one day we're going to pass the baton to people who will, you know, do life beyond us, right? Who go after us. So these stories remind me and you to endure and to stay faithful in our journey with Jesus, right? It's hard. It's hard. They get it. It's hard. These journeys remind us to stay faithful, right? Fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer of our faith. Now, I know for me, I personally don't really want to die a martyr's death, and I'm kind of like too much of a wimp for that, and I don't know if these stories are necessarily telling us we need to go out and get ourselves killed for Jesus. So I don't want to die a martyr's death, but I do want to live a martyr's life, being deeply devoted to Jesus, simple devotion, simple priorities, just being just devoted in my allegiance to him. You know, these people up here, they're ordinary people, just doing ordinary 9-to-5 jobs, normal things with their lives, raising families, just being citizens in their societies. So there's nothing supernatural about them. They were just loyal to Jesus. Not perfect, just faithful, and we're invited to do the same. So I'm gonna give you 3 different ways to respond this morning. Our worship team is gonna lead us in a few more songs. 3 different ways to respond this morning. They'll be up here on the screen. Now first, in light of this holiday, consider thanking someone in your life who has been influential in your faith, a saint. You can either shoot them a text during this time of worship. You can actually get up and go over to them and thank them if they're here in this room. Maybe you write them a letter. Man, there have been saints among us that have been super influential in our faith. Maybe it's a professor, maybe it's an RA, a coach, a staff member, a friend. Man, consider thanking them for their influence. That's another thing we can do on All Saints Day. It's a time for us to be grateful for the saints in our lives. That's one way to respond. Second way you can respond is maybe you're not where you want to be in your faith this morning. Maybe you feel unmotivated or weak. Maybe you wish you had more devotion, but you just don't feel it sometimes. I feel like that sometimes. That's where you're at. That's okay. Jesus meets you where you're at. And I'm actually going to invite, I'm going to ask some of our student leaders. I'm going to ask Hannah and Sean and Zach and Carlos, Bella, Mac and Quinn, you guys can come on up right now and you guys can sit here on stage. If you guys want prayer, these friends of mine are going to be up on stage and are willing to pray for you. If you want just prayer for your faith, if you want to just have a prayer just to be more motivated in your faith, all of these awesome student leaders are up here and are willing to pray for you this morning as we're in our second worship set. Last thing, if you have made a decision to follow Jesus and give your devotion to him, we do this thing at the end of the semester called baptism. And baptism is a time where you, in front of all of your friends, proclaim your faith in Jesus. So our faith is personal, but it's not private. It's a time when we get to show everyone around us that we indeed are a follower of Jesus, not perfect, but we are proclaiming our allegiance to him. And we do that at the end of the semester, the last chapel of the year. And so if you're interested in baptism, we have a QR code up here. You can fill that out. We also have a slip of paper on stage, and we have slips of paper in the back. And you just fill out that QR code and you can meet up with me and we'll talk about that. And we'll be holding baptisms at the end of the semester, in the first week of December. So let me pray for all of us. I'm actually going to ask all of you to stand as we close out with some worship. We're way early this morning, and so we have a little bit of time. So I'm going to pray, and hopefully this can be a time where you can feel invited just to respond. So Jesus, we thank you for these stories. Lord, thank you that you give us an opportunity to live for you. It's the best life ever, God, even when it's hard. Lord, you invite us into just doing adventurous things with our lives as we live for you. It's so worth it. And so thank you for these stories, these friends of mine who I've never met, God, that they lived faithfully for you and their legacies live on. Thank you that we can honor them. Lord, we thank you, Jesus, that you are worth living for, Lord. And thank you so much for inviting us into such a life as this, Jesus. God, we ask these things in your holy and precious name. Amen.